And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
It's all over now. When we got the Russians and the United States doing joint military exercises here in America. In America. Wow. I tell you about what happened last night. Let's just go through some of the headlines, though. I mean, I'm just whizzing through Freedom's Phoenix here, and I'm just, damn. Tell you what, we met a lot of people, that are readers of Freedom's Phoenix, listeners to the show and so on. Last night we had an event. We didn't make a super uber big deal about it, but we put up on Freedom's Phoenix that Mark Victor was going to be speaking at Chester's Harley-Davidson last night in Mesa, where he's given a presentation for an hour and a half or so on carrying a firearm, on use of firearm, when and what to expect and how. And basically it comes down to this. Mark Victor, good friend of mine, partner on the Freedom Summit, criminal defense attorney, and he's always called in by the media when there's a, Trayvon Martin thing or something, and he's always on TV saying, this is what could happen and so on. He's one of those guys. And he's a Marine. We'll just go to trial. A lot of defense attorneys and so on, they're just holding your hand. They'll just file the paperwork. They're just going, they're part of the system of, they screwed you. But Mark Dipp, no. We always ready to go to trial. So they, big bad guys know this, and a lot of times they'll bluster and bluff, and we're going and so on. And there's so many cases where I've never known an attorney to be able to argue for Rule 20 and get it. It's very infrequent that you even hear about it or know about it and that he gets them all the time. A Rule 20 is when the judge just gives you an acquittal. You don't even have to put on defense. He goes, the prosecution puts on their defense, and he did this, he did it. He goes, everything they said, we stipulated, it's still not a crime. So they don't even read the law. They don't know what's got to dismiss. Okay, you're dismissed, done, it's over. Why were we here? I've seen that. He did it with Shelton, 4409. Five charges. He gets up. He goes, I love to argue this, but they didn't read the law. Dismissed, done. And you sit around looking at each other. What the hell just happened? The understanding the law is not the same thing as agreeing with it, supporting it, or even, glad you're making money from it or what. I mean, Mark has always been, appropriate. Matter of fact, it's attorneyforfreedom.com. What happened was he had an opportunity to, they did some marketing stuff with different events that were put on by Harley-Davidson motorcycle clubs and so on. His marketing guy started to, make acquaintance with the promotion guy for this large dealership. Then they started talking. Yeah, we could, work something out. You can come speak. You can do different things. We have coordinated events. We have events that you could be a vendor at, have a booth, and so on. So they started developing a relationship. And I know Mark, man. He's, he's got the, the fastest Corvette. He's got the biggest house. He's got the, he's just one of those guys and put all the accessories on my new Harley-Davidson. So he's got this badass Harley-Davidson that's, still being finished and accessorized. And, that'll be a few weeks, Mr. Victor. We gotta get all the chrome. So he's getting it custom painted and everything. It's going to be, has him flying through the air, you know, with a big gavel in one hand, you know, and I can't remember what's in the other, a law book or something. And he's flying through the air, pounding on the beast that's coming out of the courtroom and so on. So he's going to be, you know, the attorney for freedom. And he sees that the Harley-Davidson motorcycle organizations and culture as a big market. So he's like, yeah, you know, he can justify, I'm sure, that spending the gazillion dollars on a brand new motorcycle with all the woohoo, you know, can easily make back and reap rewards by being an attorney for the community. So there are a couple, you know, that compete for that, but they're not going to be able to compete with, you know, Mark's flair, man. I mean, it's just, he's going to be the man. Well, he gave a presentation on the use of firearms and when and not and so on, and we had promoted it on Freedom's Phoenix and on the show and so on. So there was a lot of people there. I don't know, it was probably like 60 or something, you know. And he just goes in, they have a meeting room there. It was all filled up, and they were, you know, had their attention. You know, they were paying attention and a lot of questions, and it was really informative. And we should do a show about that. You know, what Mark did a lot of times is he would have these 1 minute and up to 3 minute little radio spots that we used to do for the show that, you know, he would explain what to do when you're DUI stop, or, you know, with a firearm, or, you know, how to survive a traffic stop, you know, and different things like that, you know. And his main thing is just shut up. The one thing he really emphasized, he spent a lot of time on this, was that the first thing, the Phoenix police look at the Miranda warning as an intelligence test. We're going to give the public an IQ test. Now, one of his good friends from the Marines, you know, he knew him before he was a defense attorney, or he went in. Heck, he's one of the head fusion center sergeant guys, you know, the Phoenix Police Department here. And I know him, we're friendly and so on, but I'm just, you know, we have interesting conversations. He said that the Phoenix Police Department, you know, the officers there, they call the Miranda warning an intelligence test. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you. If you have a right to an attorney, and if you can't afford one, we're going to give you one for free. Okay? Now, do you understand everything I just said? Yes. And still they just blah, 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 blah. And he goes in on and on and on about how, you know, just even talking to the officers is a bad idea. So then he went on to a lot of other things. But one thing that was clear as we're getting ready and people were coming in is how many people are addicted to Freedom's Phoenix. I mean, I know how it is. Once say, yeah, I go to your site. I know what that means. You don't just go to the site. You know, you have to check the site. And it just sucks up your time. It was amazing to me how long Donna went before she started reading Freedom's Phoenix on a regular. How long ago did you start actually reading Freedom's Phoenix on a regular basis? Okay. Not the first 3 years. Okay. It's been 7 years. And for the first few years, you know, she's like, yeah, 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 whatever. But once she got sucked in, you know, I think it was during, it started during the Lovelution. You know, Dr. Paul, she's a real fan of Dr. Paul. And once we got into Lovelution and all that kind of stuff, she got in there, Daily Paul and all that kind of, man, she just, you know, well, it was all over. So I knew, you know, a lot of people that knew people that I knew, it was pleasant to say hello to everybody. But I really am understanding of why Freedom's Phoenix is so addicting. And the reason is because you don't get this stuff anywhere else. I mean, it's just a wide radar screen that. And it's not necessarily, I mean, of course, it has libertarian flair to it. Certainly, you know, that's our you know, leanings. But, you know, we allow the left and right to say their thing. In fact, I need them to. I put stories up here from, you know, Wall Street Journal, whatever, going blah, 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 blah. But you need that. When we come back, I want to tell you, you know, some of the things that what we were working on with the biker community last night and how that's going to go into the future and some things and reason why I went out there and just go through the headlines. I mean, it's amazing what's happening in this world and that warp speed. We'll be right back.
Take control of your money today and do it with style. Young Austrians are right now fashioning the silver economy. Would you like to take part? You'll find all the tools you need at DontTreadOnMeme.com. Don't Tread on Meme is the only place where you can get your hands on silver dime trading cards with the most unforgettable designs, like Clint Eastwood's Fistful of Silver Dollars, Murray Rothbard, Enemy of the State, the Ron Paul Lovelution, and the cover art of George Orwell's book 1984. Download the free silver calculator app from the iPhone or Android markets and get up-to-the-minute silver spot prices at your fingertips. And hey, we're all Austrians now, so why not express your passion for silver and promote the ideas of honest money with Don't Tread on Meme's clever apparel? Boycott an empire of theft. Buy silver. Trade with value. Build a society of consent. Do it all at DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's DontTreadOnMeme.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
New Rhodes. All right. Let me go ahead and get, before we get to the headlines, give you a couple of other updates. Last night on Coast to Coast with Jordan Ory, Charles Goyette, you know, did a, I think it was at least an hour. I was just got home. You know, it was late night. I just got home from the event last night, and Donna had it on the computer in the bedroom. And so we listening to Charles going about his book, and it was just an excellent show. And he's just what I love interviewing Charles because, I mean, you know, I'll get in a little bit. You know me when I have guests. You know, I'm trying to. I mean, first thing is, there's no dead air on my show. See how annoying it is? So there's no dead air on my show, man. There's always something, yada, yada. So the whenever a guest, they give a short answer, they're starting, you know, I'm like, hey, man, I can fill time. I said, I don't need you, man. You know, I'm just, you're just playing blah, 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 blah. But, you know, with Charles, you just you turn on the switch, you get started, and you, man, I can go to the bathroom, you know. Then I know, man, he's doing good, and doesn't need me. He's taking the time to give you what for. Another person like that is Adam Kokesh. You know, I mean, you just, you know, on go, man. You can just guest host. You know, I do the same thing when I go on other shows. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, you know, to be said, and, you know, we're going to entertain the crowd, and, you know, give them everything they want more. So they're just going, ooh, you know. So a lot of times a host likes that. I mean, of course, they like to, you know, kind of interject and be part of the show a little bit. But, you know, the Charles, man, he just went at it, and he gave him the whole if you had never heard any of this libertarian freedom's the answer, what's the question kind of stuff, why freedom works, all the things that's happened, who's done it, where we can go in the future. I mean, that one show on Coast to Coast, Charles Goyette, and we spent 2 hours, the same stuff that we did when he came on Monday or last week, you know, for 2 hours. Then he took that 2 hour, instead of being a conversation, man, it was a freaking lecture. And he put it all in one thing, and like, here we go. And I sat there, and we just listened to him. We're just like, Charles, you know, preach it. Give him what fur, man. You know, and he did them up. And that's a large audience. And he was really excited about doing that because last, a year and a half ago, when he was on before, that was a big giant boost in his book sales for the Dollar Meltdown. Well, now it's red and blue and broke all over. I was never really a big fan of the title. You know, I mean, I understand what he's trying to say and so on. I'm not sure what else you would call it, you know, because it's pretty accurate, you know. But he really, and a lot of recent news and a lot of old stuff that we had covered before and everything and how they connect. They segue from the Clinton administration to now. I mean, all these people. Now, the same. You know, one of the things that he talked about that he did when he had a book signing at Barnes & Noble last week in Scottsdale, and, you know, they'll fill it up and get another nice crowd there, come in, and, you know, give it to us. And he tells the story of Ruben, you know, which was Ruben was Goldman Sachs head chairman, blah, 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 and he became Treasury Secretary. Well, when the Mexican government needed a lot of money, they float a bunch of these bonds, and it's payable back in dollars. Well, of course, they do pesos, so they, of course, they're taxing their people in pesos. The devaluation of the peso goes, so it takes 15 gazillion pesos to a dollar. There was no way they could pay it back. Goldman Sachs and all these big bondholders and risky, we get a high interest kind of, ooh, we're going to make some money, and this starts to go bad, and it's done, and it's over, and you're going to lose it all. So we need a Mexican bailout with a U.S. taxpayer funding it, and the money didn't go to Mexico, went straight to Goldman Sachs. That was it in a nutshell. Well, once they get away with that, they're going, hey, that worked out. And that was foreign banks. You know, that was a foreign guy. Hey, we can do that for our boys here. And, you know, so this is just a continuation of the same thing that, you know, many of us have been screaming about for a long time. And they're just, oh, you're just conspiracy nut. Oh, it doesn't matter. Oh, why are you so concerned? Oh, it's just a little, you know, kind of, you know, I got other things to do. So I'm just, it's so amazing to me how important this stuff is, and it's just swept under the table. But you get a sense of how it happened and why and who's responsible, that kind of stuff, when you go to an event like last night. I'll give you an example. As Mark is giving his presentation on gun rights and all that kind of stuff, you know, it of course, stayed focused on that, which is interesting because usually it goes off and Lord knows what else. But he kept it focused on that. But afterwards, you know, a lot of the people coming up talking to me and to Mark, and one of them was a congressional candidate, a Republican that was a city councilman in a small city of Chandler here. Chandler, it was one of the top 10 fastest growing communities on the planet or whatever at one time. Now here, I mean, Chandler's, that's where Mark Victor's law firm is. It's in the East Valley. It's right near Tempe, Mesa, borders Tempe, I think. And he's a city councilman there, and he's going through all this stuff. And he has a lot of little claims to fame, you know, that he's willing to share. And we'll try and get him on the show and so on. Donna, he may be calling. You know, it's District 9 Republican. Just put him on. We'll find out just how Ron Paul he is. Which, of course, they always claim. What happened is he is in a race with five other Republicans. There are, I think, three Democrats. I think it's a new district. And Kyrsten Sinema is a state legislator that resigned to run for Congress. Now, Kyrsten, bestest buddies with Janet Napolitano. Openly green socialist party, whatever, before went Democrat because they're socialist enough, I guess. And wins, you know, nice enough woman, had her on the show before, known her for a long time. We understand each other. It's one of those. I mean, I have a lot of respect for her in this one instance, is that she does not try and convince me that she's not Konami. You know what I mean? She just knows that we are totally different in our opinion. I'm not even sure she even believes it, but she knows better to try and convince me. She understands. She knows exactly what my position is and why. She knows I can argue. She knows I rational. But she goes, yeah, but Ernie, don't you think I mean, seriously, are we going to have this conversation again? So we can have a, you know, a cordial relationship. Have, you know, conversations, see where we overlap. We worked on, you know, legislation before. Heck, she even co-sponsored with conservative Karen Johnson the legislation to allow for there to be a monument to the Bill of Rights here in Arizona. She was one of the people on the other side that helped make that happen. Now, of course, conservative Republicans stripped that bill, did away with it, did a strike all amendment to another bill that they could have the sponsors be who they wanted because they didn't even want a Democrat on there. Got help get it all started along with Karen, Republican Democrat, and supported the Bill of Rights. We got to strip all them Democrats off, and she took it well. She's like, eh, you know, cool, as long as we get it done and the Bill of Rights monument's being done. But, you know, this race that's going on, I'll tell you about the conversation with this congressional candidate. And after the event, Mark talk to these people, what they were talking about to us, what their issues were in the motorcycle community. You know, how liberty-oriented are they? Do you think they would be? We'll talk about it when we come back. Yep.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Yeah, Charles went ahead and put that up. You can get the archive to Coast, and has him from last night. But you got to pay like $6-7 to get access to the archive and so on. Yeah, I should charge you guys. We used to at one time, but it even though it we had a lot of subscribers and so on, it's just the traffic went way down, and we really wanted to share with you more. Then we wanted to make money off of you. I mean, it's kind of, it's hard to do this, and decide, what you charge for and what you don't. I mean, we have the radio show, we have the magazine, we have the website, we have different levels of access to the website and how it can be used and so on. We're working on right now monetizing, how we're going to, do that. And we're really pushing the magazine subscription because it comes with a lot of other features and so on Freedom's Phoenix too. But it's, I don't know. I know we're working on it now. One of the things is we're trying to get all the shopping cart stuff and everything set up. Because where's the future? I think it's probably going to be in merchandising, where yogurt says, space balls. Merchandising, where the money's really made. So it looks like that's what we're doing, especially when it comes to the gold. And we're working on that, too. And that's one of the things that is really starting when silver and gold went down. All that meant to me is just buy more. I mean, it's like I love when it goes down. That means I get more. So there's a what is it here? Oh, yeah. It says Reuters gold standard inevitable. $10,000 an ounce looms, says new book. So when you got Reuters out there, talking about this, you just got to go, A return to the gold standard is inevitable, perhaps as early as next year, and gold prices could hit $10,000 an ounce. I'm going, really? I mean, it's not that that surprises me. It surprises me that they put it on Reuters. So this is the kind of stuff that we're, looking at. And we've been screaming it, so it's not going to be like, a surprise to anybody. I don't know how loud we got to say it, how much we got to yell it. I mean, last night, and it was 2 hours. And it just only seemed like an hour. Charles making the point that, sooner or later, here we go. It's going to get to the point to where you get, as he calls it, I think Hayek, was the one that did this, economist, saying it's called the crack-up boom. Crack-up boom is when, the way it's described, is when people will trade in their worthless toilet paper for anything. Got a crack coffee mug? Sure. Here, take some of my toilet paper. At least I got a mug, I mean, anything. Rake, shovel. My goodness, I can get a pick. Maybe I can do something with that. So this is coming. And when they do trillions and trillions of dollars that we know of, and all that, and they're abandoning the dollar around the world, that money comes home. So it's not that gold is shooting up to 10,000. It's that, the dollar is devaluing rapidly before our eyes. This hyperinflation thing is coming. You can't stop it. It's already happened. This just, you're starting to see it manifested in food prices over the last couple of years. I mean, if you go grocery shopping, the consumer price index shows that it's only, there's only 3% inflation. It's not that bad. Yeah. Well, they keep changing the index. Take food and fuel and housing off. Oh, okay. Well, I guess if you're not eating, going anywhere, or have a place to live, I guess there's no inflation. I'm going, who makes this stuff up? They, them, those. Okay? So last night, we got a really good dose of the mindset, of a lot of America. You would think that Harley-Davidson riding leave-me-alone-ist individuals, are, really more free. And they are. Now, they just want to be let there. They're already a default position is, bite me and don't mess with me. But as we're talking to the event coordinator, this is give you an idea. They have probably acres in downtown Phoenix, big commercial lots and so on. They got a beautiful showroom. I mean, it is top of the line. They got a beautiful other showroom of just used Harleys. Then they have an enormous parking lot. They got a big giant event building, and it has, because they wouldn't allow them to have an outdoor stage, he goes, oh, okay, well, it's a loading dock. So they put a ramp up to it and kind of to the door, and it has a big giant loading dock that converts into a stage, okay? So they have this big, you know, seriously, now the man. So they have this beautiful building. They do a lot of training there. Now they have a lot of events at weddings. They have a big, giant, insulated steel building closed in, kind of, you know, have event. There's all kinds of stuff that they can do. They have, you know, 8,000 people come to their concerts that they do there. And you have big names. You know, it's kind of, you know, Molly Hatchet kind of stuff. So they have, you know, big names come in to get Charlie Daniels band coming up there and some bikers, man. Woohoo, here they come. As we're touring the facility for doing freedom events and so on, Mark had me come there early with his event coordinator, talking to theirs, you know, do a Freedom Summit. We'll have a different event. We got, you know, we're always looking for a place to do something cool. Well, they have it all set in there, the band, all the plug-ins, a stage, the lights, you know, that'd be a beautiful place. But I can tell just from, you know, my experience with them, you know, of course, Mark is playing, you know, attorney. It's a market for him. You know, he's not going to compromise his position, but he's playing nice. Well, after the event, I bring Mark over, the event guy, we're talking. I said, look, this is how this is going to work. I already feel right now. If we have even Dr. Ron Paul comes here, and he's got big crowds, all young people, now get the bike. There's going to be fistfights back there because the anti-war issue, the drug issue, a lot of other things like, you know, about gay marriage or something. Now, you would think a lot of these people would be more, you know, liberty-oriented, but Harley-Davidson riders, man, you get a lot of Vietnam veterans. Yeah, a lot of veterans that, you know, they got their colors on, and, man, it's red, white, and blue, and eagles. And I said, you know, they go, oh, yeah, you can keep your Ron Paul over there, kind of, you know, yeah, the Santa, oh, we, you know, these guys know they got to, sometimes you got to fight for your freedom. I mean, you know, boom, right there, you know, see, are you sure? So what's going to happen is the owner of Chester's, Mr. Chester, you know, he made his money aerospace doing whatever, and then he bought cable companies in small towns that got bought out by Cox, and then he did some other thing, and eventually he's kind of retiring, and I got my money and flying my Citation jet around, and I got 7 dealerships around the country that I ride my motorcycle and stuff around, trips with my, you know, operations guy and promotion guy, and we go visit, and I'm enjoying life and chilling. So he's just, you know, how much are they willing to anger their market? You know, even if he is, could be persuaded by Mark to go, you know what, this war thing sucks. You know, we could do, you know, it's a business. You know, how do you do that? Where's the shift? You can see it happen in things just like this. We start having events. Mark goes there and does, you know, speaks to them. They're kind of surprised that they had as many people there last night. They go, wow, you know, we put in, you know, one of those small meeting rooms, and it fills it up, and they're, you know, cool. Get to meet a lot of new people. Mark buys, you know, the most expensive bike and with all the most expensive whatever because it's Mark, you know. And so they're going, okay, you know, cool. They're willing to, you know, let you have your say. So he'll have lunch with them. They'll get together. They'll talk. He'll do the freedom thing. And I'll tell you, even if he's able to convince him as an individual that, you know, maybe it's a war debate. Maybe you get the biggest neocon and fist slamming, we got to go kill the Muslims versus the whatever, and you get a Jacob Hornberger up there from Future Freedom Foundation, or, you know, a Dr. Paul or Charles Goyette or, you know, me or Mark or something up there, and we give them up for, you feel comfortable about that kind of thing. This is America. This is what's happening everywhere. It's a cultural thing. I mean, I see it happening over and over and over. And when they do events, they have 30,000 people come out for their rides and so on. When they do their concerts, it's, you know, 7,000-8,000 people. What happens when you infiltrate the Harley-Davidson riders? Then what? I don't know. The man's in trouble.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com, constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Yeah, you think you do. I'll give you an example. Last night, there were a couple of gentlemen that went to the presentation by Mark Victor on when you can and can't use a firearm and what, you know, pretty much he goes, it's like this. As the guy is breaking into your bedroom window at 2 o'clock in the morning with an AK-47 and coming at you in about, you know, a nanosecond, you got to determine whether it's worth pulling out your gun and shooting them based on this fact. You're going to get arrested. They're going to haul your ass down. They're going to go through all of your face down on the ground. You call the cops. They come, and you shut up. You don't say anything. You wait till you get your turn. They go through the process, and, you know, then you got to go through all of the stuff. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, is it better to just, you know, do you have an opportunity to flee? Do you have an opportunity, whatever you can, you know, to try and avoid having to go through all this crap? But if it's better, you know, to go through all that than be dead, well, guess what? Your decision is. So he was trying to discourage, because a lot of these people, like, yeah, I'm looking, you know, kind of like the Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin thing. They're looking for an opportunity. Ooh, going to get me some. You know, ooh, this is a clean shot. Oh, yeah, baby. It's a video game for real. We're going to get one for her. Boom. Yeah, he did. And I'm, you know, so he went through all these situations in law that, well, you would think that, you know, it'd be justified, and, you know, and then, you know, maybe it's not, or it's how it's perceived by officer, you know, how the system really works. Well, a couple of the people that were there are Border Patrol guys. Now, this is a, you know, not an uncommon thing to have some people that, for whatever motivation, they're on the border out there, join some kind of militia or group or patrol or whatever. And sometimes with the cooperation, they are agents with the FBI or the state police, or they do whatever the excuse, they go out there and they're going to get them illegal immigrants or drug trafficking, Protect Arizona from. Because of the drug war, there is, I mean, right on the other side of the border, they got staging areas and landing strips and doing, I mean, it's just, it's like a war going on down there. But when Mark says, yeah, so end the drug war, and it goes away tomorrow. Well, but drugs are bad. You know, I used to be an addict. I lost a brother. My mom is addicted to whatever. Yeah, all the more reason to end the drug war. So you have that conversation. Well, we want you to come and talk about how we're justified, we can blast somebody away using our guns when they and we're defending the country in America. Well, I'd be more than happy to come talk to you, but, you know, you want to solve the problem in the drug war. So you get into that conversation. Yeah, but then they come over and the welfare state, this, that, okay, and the welfare state. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, liberty is, you think you are until you start really getting what's at the core. Oh, you'll never see more liberty-oriented people than, you know, Harley Davidson, leave me alone, is kind of, yeah, probably. But let me tell you what happens. You'll have, out of 1,000 people, there will be that 14 in their own little clique, group, club that starts their own website and boycott such and such Harley Davidson dealership because they're not, you know, America enough and want to, you know, shoot people that wear towels on their head. I mean, you know, the vast majority, we think you're absolutely correct. You know, but that's, you know, their culture, their representation of this Harley lifestyle and so on may be not be as liberty oriented as you think. But it's changing. This is what, you know, because of fuel price, one thing that they were seeing in a downturn in the economy here, why are there so many Harley Davidsons being sold? The biggest reason, fuel prices. They go 40, 50 miles a gallon and they get a nice, for $15,000, $20,000 or something, you know, a lot more, some of these, you know, especially if you buy a used one, you could buy for $5,000, you can get yourself a nice few years old, low mileage, for all the chrome, freaking awesome. I'm glad to be here. Ain't I cool, Harley Davidson? My 23-year-old son has a kick-ass 2005 1200 Sportster chromed out, you know, kind of because he could, which I think he's about willing to sell now with a third baby coming on the way. Him and his wife are kind of, you know, maybe his Harley riding thing's over for a while. So the friends that they went out, they got pregnant and so on. So they're just, you know, all right, we went through our Harley phase. But I'm going, you know, can I borrow it? No. Of course, they trash everything I ever had, but, you know, I'm not allowed to touch their stuff. So that's another issue. Out of principle, we'll ride that thing out of principle. So what happened? Well, Donna may not let me. But, when we first had our first child, Rhea, I was in a hospital from a motorcycle accident. A friend of mine's motorcycle, on the street. I did get hurt on dirt. I used to race motorcycles, motocross, so my sons did too. And, motorcycles have been the most injury-prone devices and part of our life. So maybe not, especially riding on the street, man. You're just, you know, it's like Russian roulette. I'm like, seriously? You know, So I just, you know, I'm backhand them. But, you know, if you can get your self-esteem built up, you don't need a $130,000 sports car because you can be just as co with your Harley and get 50 miles of the gallon. Guess what? You know, all of a sudden you become a Harley guy. Ain't I cool? I mean, you know, and they were, Mark, this is how it is. Mark, getting the aftermarket stuff, of course, he's got to get the blah, blah, blah pipe system that's going to be and loud and everything. And the event guy goes, here, just show you my motorcycle. And it has a really nice exhaust system. It's a beautiful bike. And he gets it, he starts it up. And he goes, oh, yeah, I used to have those other ones. But when I'm driving down the highway, I can hardly even hear him. But I hear these. And he's like, ooh, maybe I need to change the pipe, get the other ones, because, you know, these are louder. Now, just remember the South Park episode where you have all these Harley guys going, it's got to be loud enough. And so on. These guys really are like that. You know, we be here. Well, since Mark is advertising, heck, the paint job on his thing is going to be in promotion of his law firm and everything. Well, maybe you want a little louder. Heck, why don't you just get some Bose speakers, man, and, you know, just amp it up. So this is, you know, the mindset that these people are in. They're in a culture that is supportive of what? America. MKers, man, big time. And part of that is we're going to defend America at the border. After this event, Mark and I were walking back to our cars and so on. We had to go around a long way because of locked gates and different sections they have and so on. And a couple of these other gentlemen, they were, oh, we need you to come talk. Well, what does he do? He goes, well, you may not... Now, like, well, here, let me get you this one article. And he looks through his brief and so on. He has one copy left of legalized methamphetamine, ! I remember about 5 years ago when Mark wrote that. Now, he has a lot, you know, how to survive a traffic stop, you know, firearm deal. You know, he has these different articles he has on his website, attorneyforfreedom.com. You can search it, legalized methamphetamine, and it'll just blow up all over your Google search. You read that article. He's a criminal defense attorney. He's like, man, I make lots of money on the drug war. Yeah, the drug war doesn't make me rich, man. You just keep on, you know, having that law, and I got all kinds of drug dealing, big, and I go to trial and kind of make lots of money. And he goes, but I'll tell you, in my confidential attorney privilege conversations, all these big drug leaders and everything, they love the drug war. The day you decriminalize drug, you get the government out of the drug war, all of a sudden their entire life goes away. Prohibition does not work. So what do you say? Oh, legalize, you know, marijuana, medical marijuana. Oh, it's okay to have a little bit of this or that. And you go, no, legalize methamphetamine. He goes, I know how bad they are. I got people coming in my office with half their teeth falling out of their head. Of course, I know how bad it is. You know, Mark goes to the gym every day. It's like 5 a.m. thing with him, even his young son, going to the gym. He bench presses over 300 pounds. I mean, and Mark's not a tall guy. You know, I mean, heck, he's only with platforms and this and that and everything. He wishes he was 5'6", 5'7". But, I mean, you know, he's about as wide as he is tall. And I tell you, Mark is like, man, you know, he's Mr. Health Nut. But I tell you, he's like, that's not the point. The point is, do you own yourself? And as you go into this conversation, their whole rationale for being on the border and going after all these drug trafficking, and we're not going to have the violence coming in the cartel and doing all these, is because drugs are bad. Yeah, but the drug war is worse. So do they want them to have come have a conversation with them? Because once you start planning these ideas, changing the culture, I keep emphasizing the culture. You do that, everything else goes. So then I have a congressional candidate there wanting to, you know, convince me how much better he is on the other other guys to on how he's going to rule us. You know, I mean, I'd be as nice as possible. You're more than welcome to come on the show. We'll put your stuff up on the site. We'll do whatever. But I'm just, you know, I just want you to understand that I'm going to ask you this, 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 and this, and proper role of, and so on. Here's a city councilman, Chandler, and I'm, you know, he seemed nice enough. Angela Garcia, you know, one of the activists in Ron Pollard, she's supporting, taking him around, introducing him to people. So I'm like, all right, you know, come on, man. But I tell you, you know, what side are you on? Freedom side? I don't know. We'll find out. So, when we come back, we're going to talk about the gold standard. Inevitable, we're going to the gold standard.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Make them remember. We are not afraid.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, and they be clouds outside. You go look at the weather in Arizona, it's like real clouds. None of this chemtrail stuff. I mean, like some real, got some water in them. Probably has a lot of chemtrail stuff in it, but, you know, whatever. We're going to do more on that in the future. I mean, I've done the, you know, Griffins, what in the world do they spray them? We've covered this. We've done different things, you know, where they're, you know, in Marana, which is a CIA front airport north of Tucson, and how and their planes land doing, you know, everybody's theory about whatever. And I'm going to look at this from a different perspective, though. I just want to know, where's the left on this thing? Where are all the environmentalists? You have this, I mean, it's so obvious here in the Valley. It's like, I tell you, when it becomes, you know, people start, you know, going, acknowledging it, is when your life changes in some way. You start recognizing, you know, actual things that happen. I mean, you know, health, this, that, and so on. But I mean, simple things like, I go golfing, the ball goes up, you lose it. You can't go golfing here anymore because you can't find your ball. It's so gray. It's the same color. The golf ball goes up into the sky, and you just lose it. You can't see it. You're looking down the green, trying to see where it, you know, starts to hit the grass, and hopefully you hit the fairway. Because once it goes up, it's so overcast all the time now, you can't find your golf ball. And it's simple stuff like that where people are going, what the heck, man? Why is it all, you know, and I'm going, ah, see, now you're paying attention. It's amazing. And we don't even go outside and look up anymore. You go out and it's like, you know, there used to be stars. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, simple stuff. Culture. Culture. Donna, see if you can find, there was a promo video up here for Pork Fest. And I think it scrolled on the page too. Can you put it up on, you know, today's archive? Because Drew did a, it's a promo Pork Fest 2012 or something. If you just do a search on Freedom's Phoenix Archive, it'll probably come up. But I was watching, and I can't find it, but we'll get it up there, because I was watching it, and it was a good promo done that Drew Phillips put together that promotes going to Pork Fest and, you know, has good audio mixed in with a lot of the pictures and things that are happening. But there's a video that's the first time that I've seen it. I kept hearing about it, of Julian Heichlin, which is like 80 or more, and him at Buzz's Big Gay Dance Party, and him up on the platform dancing. You know, it was like, and they're putting dollar bills in his, you know, belt and so on. It was awesome. Julian's so cool. I mean, he's, can you imagine having a professor like that, that goes out after he's got tenure in an office there at Penn State University? There's a professor there. That's where Donna went to school, where she lived in State College there. That's where I met her, where we got married, and everybody got big ties to Penn State. Got enough Penn State cups and crap to last me for the rest of my life, because their family, big Penn State, their brother, man, lives and dies by, and this Paterno thing just really had a big impact on him. So while he's professor there, and he comes out, he's going out in the front lawn 420 and, man, smoking dope out, and arrest me, keep arresting me, I keep coming back. Now, and then he does this Fiji thing. He just won his case in Florida, you know, passed out stuff, you know, at the federal building. So this is, you know, here's a really good activist that, you know, sees the opportunity, go to Pork Fest and be around the guys. And can you imagine at that late of a stage in your life to feel home? I mean, he just loves the attention, girls hugging on him all the time, him going up and dancing, partying and everything. He's enjoying his life. But in the middle of all this, you know, he's getting jumped on, arrested, and he goes limp and he doesn't talk. And he's just like, man, I got nothing to say. Next. Well, of course, they put you in the ambulance to Bellevue, and they, you know, give you chemicals and torture you and put knuckles in your sternum and try and get you, you know, just because they can. Now, we're, you want to know, how is it that we, the people allow that? I remember in junior high, it was eighth grade, and they're doing all this, you know, you get the Holocaust treatment. And the only thing that I could think of, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, everybody thinks this, how the hell did they let this happen? Why they just voluntarily got on the cattle car? You look at pictures and you go, there's five guys with rifles that, you know, most of them weren't even loaded, you know? I mean, and all these, you know, hundreds, thousands of people just got on the cattle cars. You know, hope. Human beings, one of their greatest strengths and greatest weaknesses. Because it's like, oh, well, hopefully we'll not have to, you know, I mean, there's a certain time it's like, but when is that time? It's an individual decision. And when somebody tries to make that decision for you, you know, they got ulterior motives. You know, they're always wanting to do something else. So I encourage you to go check out today's archive, and go listen, go give that a view, because, you know, it's good just for Julian Heichlin thing. Then plus you see a bunch of other events and so on that, you know, goes on there. Pork Fest, I enjoyed it so much the last 2 years that nothing that great can last. The man doesn't allow it. So don't think you're just going to go there and be all kinds of stupid and do whatever you want, because there's always the man there. I mean, we try and point him out. You know, everybody's like, that guy? Fed. I mean, they try to camouflage it. You know, they'll wear the right thing and say the right stuff. They got to get deeper in. They got to get better at their job, because these guys are so freaking obvious, because they don't understand. They think it's just, I don't know what they think. You know, I'm anti-war. Or I'm anti-drug war, or I'm whatever, and then, but they don't have the core understanding of really the freedom philosophy, and they stick out like a sore thumb. It is amazing. Heck, even, you know, our resident, you know, guy we keep making fun of, you know, he was a trainer at the police academy back east. His name's Jeff Cook. And then his son, Jeff Cook Jr., just got out of the military. West Point grad, just got out. Was in Iraq and so on. And this last month, he was out and he was going to speak at the Breakfast Club. He goes, they still kind of got me. I'm still in this gray area for another month or two. You know, let's wait until after that, and I'll tell you everything you want to know. And he goes, I'm an officer, just getting you. They still got, you know, the little so many days of, we got a string on you. Well, I'm going to wait till that final string's cut and before I go spill my guts. So that'll be interesting. In June or July, we're going to have him give us what for. So I'm looking forward to that. But I tell you, you know, his dad looks like highway patrolman, man. The mustache, tall, slender, fit guy. He's good, you know, he got Fed ridden all over him. And if he didn't, excuse me, if he didn't hang with us and everything, everybody be on the Fed. And we go, yeah, whatever, he's our Fed. So, but even he, you know, doesn't stick out as much as some of these other guys wearing some, you know, whatever psychedelic peace symbol on their forehead kind of thing. You know, it's just, you can spot them. And I remember in the movie Sir, No Sir, where they have all these anti-war activist things during the Vietnam War at military bases. And on the wall it said, you know, the man is welcome here. And he's talking to the crowd. And he goes, look, it's not so much that the man is welcome here. It's that the man is always here. So don't ever assume in any of these events, anything you do, there's not somebody there being a confidential informant, kind of doing whatever snitching, make their living at generating some kind of something to keep their money flow up. That's just the way it is. So you got to be careful and measured in what you say. You know, there's no reason to compromise. But when it comes to all this action that somebody's going to take or something, that's an individual decision. And whenever somebody tries to collectivize or do a policy or a platform, or your little committee and shiny badge wearing board of directors saying what our thing we're going to vote and do, the guy that's instigating, oh, we're going to you know, get violent here, we're going to go confront that, or we're going to go rob this, or we're going to something. Fed. Agent provocateur. I mean, every single freaking time they have to provoke this kind of stuff because good people aren't generally wired that way. They just want to be left alone. But if you don't have a philosophical core, they'll meander you into breaking the law because you make enough laws, everybody's a criminal. They just gotta get you to, you know, help them provide the evidence for it so they get you. Don't get got.
Arizona has been one of the hottest real estate markets in the past, up until the last couple of years. Homes that were once going for $500,000 to $1 million in prestigious areas are now going for less than half of what the original purchase price was. That makes it a very good time to buy. So if you were ever thinking of retiring to Arizona's inviting climate and laid-back and friendly lifestyle, now is the time. That's where I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty, and I have provided a way for you to search for properties that are of interest to you, all at your own convenience and without having to give out any personal information. Visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com to start your search today. And when you're ready to make a move to Arizona's warm and sunny climate, please feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. Many are working hard to make sure Arizona is not only a beautiful place to live, but a free and peaceful one as well. So what are you waiting for? Make your move today by calling 602-828-1819. And don't forget to visit my webpage at DonnaHancock.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
It's like, I don't care about nothing, man. Roll another blunt. Yeah. Oh,
la la da 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 la da. La 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 la. Yeah. I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. La da, my room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da.
Yeah, you know, there are, you know, that it's a freedom thing. You know, because I tell you, you know, it's they think that we don't understand. Yeah, but drugs are bad. And I'm going, yeah, that's an individual decision. If your room's dirty and you didn't get stuff done and it's all, you know, why are you so worried? One of the guys was a teacher. And last night and we were talking and he went on the border and all this kind of drugs are bad because, you know, I'm a teacher and I see how these people come in. They're wasting their life. They're doing. And he goes on and on and on. And Mark and I just look at each other. We're going like. So, I mean, that's not a justification to make all of us suffer with this drug war and the expense and the intrusion on our lives and the profiting of bad guys. They love this. You know, why are you creating these gangs and this prohibition economy that has and the corruption and all, you know, based on because you think this guy's not cleaning his room? So I'm just, you know, it's that kind of thing. You know, I'm just, I just see it's going to be a shift. And he was a younger guy. He's probably in his 30s. And so I'm going, all right. I can see where, you know, we got a lot of work to do. But then you see things like students for a stateless society. Go look at Freedom's Phoenix. There's a story on that too. And I'm going, yeah, you got Students for Liberty and Students for, you know, not as much fascism, and Students for, you know, vote the right way, and Students for, you know, we're not communist, and Students for, you know, what about Students for, how about no freaking government? How about that? Students for a stateless society. So I'm always on the edge. Oh, Ernie, do you probably go, you know what? That sounds like one I want to talk to. Students for a Stateless Society. I go to Donna. Go ahead. She's already writing it down. So Students for a Stateless Society, get me somebody. Let's do it. So, I'm on the edge, man. Let's bring it up to, you know, just leave me alone-ism. All right. Well, that's what I'm thinking. So let's go ahead. The one thing I wanted to do is this. How much time I get? How much I'm yakking? I'm going to go ahead and play this piece. It's on the Gold Standard, and it's guy the Gold Revolution, and what he's talking about. This is in London that they're, you know, doing this interview. It's a new book out, and he's just a simple explanation. You know, here we go, gold. Pay attention.
Think gold is expensive at almost $2,000 an ounce? That could turn out to be the bargain of a lifetime if the world returns to some form of gold standard. That's according to John Butler, author of The Golden Revolution, and he joins me now. John, you say a return to the gold standard or a metal standard is inevitable. Why?
Inevitable is a strong word, but if you start to connect the dots and you look at the situation today, in fact, it leads you back to a gold standard. In brief, the U.S. economy has declined very dramatically as a share of the global economy since the Bretton Woods agreements broke down in the early 1970s. That's number one. Number two, what you find is that U.S. monetary policy is increasingly at odds with what other countries want. And indeed, at the recent BRIC summit in New Delhi, they issued this Delhi Declaration, which specifically criticized the Fed and U.S. economic policy generally as destabilizing their economies. So you're getting a real breakdown now. Finally, if you actually look at what restores credibility and stability to a clearly destabilized global financial system, it is gold. It's the simplest way to do it. Wait a little while, someone will be a first mover, and then they will force the issue.
Talk us through the time frame for this, because you say this could happen remarkably as early as next year.
I think it could happen as early as next year. And one reason why is because when the BRIC nations made this declaration recently, they also said very specifically that they are now working on forming their own international monetary fund, their own World Bank, and indeed will continue to grow their dependence on bilateral currency arrangements for trade. And they claim that they will complete a lot of this work inside of 1 year. It is conceivable that inside of 1 year, if the BRIC countries are still strongly dissatisfied with the dollar reserve standard that still prevails in the world, they will start to move formally back to gold.
Talk us through step by step how that is going to happen.
There are more than one way in which this could happen. One of them is that one country becomes a clear first mover and completely surprises the entire world, including the United States, by pegging its currency to gold explicitly. Russia is not an unreasonable country that might, under certain circumstances, decide to do precisely that. So imagine, if you will, at some point, say, August 2013, Russia announces to the world that it will henceforth back the currency, which they could rename if they wanted to, by gold explicitly. What happens? Well, think about it. Investors around the world, concerned about U.S. finances, concerned about U.S. economic policy, think maybe we should diversify our dollars. Maybe we should cash out some of our dollar reserves and hold these new gold-backed Russian reserves instead. Well, if that process starts in earnest, and if some countries start to diversify out of dollars, other countries will have to take up the slack. What if they don't take up the slack? The dollar will decline, potentially precipitously. You can imagine a situation in which you have another crisis meeting, say at Camp David, just as occurred to determine how to deal with the breakdown of Bretton Woods. President Nixon decided to close the gold window. What would be decided this time around? It's quite possible if the United States sees the rest of the world moving in this direction, that the United States will simply decide it must follow along. It has no other choice other than for the dollar to lose reserve status entirely.
If that's the case, why isn't gold at $10,000 an ounce?
it's really only going to reach that sort of magnitude if indeed it becomes clear and present that the world is going to be using gold not just as an alternative store of value, but as a de facto monetary asset in actual border cross-border balance of payments transactions. So I do think we're on the way to something north of 5,000, possibly north of 10,000, depending on this actual structure of this future gold standard.
The gold market is tiny compared to the trillions and trillions of dollars worth of cash and assets sloshing around the world financial system. How can countries back all of that against such a finite and tiny amount of gold?
The amount of gold is finite by weight or volume. It's not finite by price. And as we just discussed, if gold is going to be remonetized, it's entirely reasonable that its price will rise by an order of magnitude. And in fact, if the price of gold were to rise to over $10,000 an ounce, then in fact what you would have is a market capitalization, as it were, of gold vis-a-vis the money supply and credit volume generally, which is in line with a longer-term historical comparison. It implies stability.
John, thank you very much. That was John Butler, author of The Golden Revolution, talking to Reuters TV, appropriately enough, in the Goldsmith Hall in the City of London.
Yep, here we go. And what are we doing? Getting in the gold. Because we know. Now you know. We'll be right back.
Take control of your money today and do it with style. Young Austrians are right now fashioning the silver economy. Would you like to take part? You'll find all the tools you need at DontTreadOnMeme.com. Don't Tread on Meme is the only place where you can get your hands on silver dime trading cards with the most unforgettable designs, like Clint Eastwood's Fistful of Silver Dollars, Murray Rothbard, Enemy of the State, the Ron Paul Lovelution, and the cover art of George Orwell's book 1984. Download the free silver calculator app from the iPhone or Android markets and get up-to-the-minute silver spot prices at your fingertips. And hey, we're all Austrians now, so why not express your passion for silver and promote the ideas of honest money with Don't Tread on Meme's clever apparel? Boycott an empire of theft. Buy silver. Trade with value. Build a society of consent. Do it all at DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's DontTreadOnMeme.com.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Propagandy, propagandy. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy. If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes. You can do it with propagandy, propagandy, propagandy. You can liberate the babies from their candy. It's so easy, it's a sin.
Yeah, you can liberate the babies from their candy with propaganda. Well, you know, I'm how often do we see? I mean, it's constant, right up until, all of a sudden, boom, see change. You know, and you can see it better in some places than others. You know, I just, it's like Jon Stewart from The Daily Show, how he used to hammer on CNN and Fox News and so on, just to make fun of them, just how stupid they are and the kind of the stuff they say, and they don't even realize what they're saying. And I see the same kind of thing, of course, but I don't watch them enough to, I just don't care. But CNBC, because it has a ticker and so on, I only watch like 5 minutes. I'll have it on again. Watch tickers. I'm getting ready and I can see what blew up. But, I am amazed at the propaganda. I mean, propaganda. They might as well just be singing. And everything is fine right up until it's not. And then here comes Jim Cramer. They're in trouble when they start having Jim Cramer sitting at the front desk, in the morning, to keep everybody in line. Oh, no, this is, there's like, and what do they do? Out of, S&P 500, they'll pick the two or three that's doing well, and it's just all propaganda. Look how great these companies are. Of course, the entire thing lost, a gazillion dollars. But, this one, boy, if you would have picked this one, see, you're just too dumb. You're not watching us enough. So Who listens to these people? That's one thing. A lot of the guys, investors that I know, they make fun of Jim Cramer. Some people, they just love him. He's just inside and they follow him and just, he'll break you. He was a hedge fund guy that's just there for his buddies. And he'll even admit it. He goes on, Jon Stewart goes, yeah, you know, it's entertainment's fun, kind of whatever. And nobody prosecutes him for insider manipulation, doing kind of whatever. I mean, if they wanted to, he had plenty enough evidence to do it. And they make fun of the fact that random monkey betting is better than Cramer. I mean, you say, give a chimpanzee a dart and just throw it up on a board. Just randomness is better than Jim Cramer. But we listen to him. Why? I don't know. Because he's, you know, he's the monkey on the TV with all his little bells and whistles and stuff and having fun, sell, and whatever. He even gets in movies. Heck, he was in the first Iron Man. Neil and Stark stopped making weapons. You know, and they have, you know, did a scene with Gwyneth Paltrow watching Jim Cramer going, you know, off on their stock and so on. I mean, seriously. So what do we look for? Well, here's some things. You know, there's a lot of frustration now going out over the mortgage settlement. Now, we talked about this a little bit in the past, but, you know, I mean, how much detail do we need to know to understand what's going on here? A judge approved the settlement between five major banks, okay, and nearly all of the state's attorney generals for the states. The banks admitted to taking shortcuts of the robo-signing documents as they pushed through some foreclosures. And, yeah, you know. I mean, you know. And they go, yeah, we do. So what did they negotiate? Well, the bottom line is that the banks, they all wanted immunity from prosecution for criminal acts. They didn't want to get frog marched on TV as they're being escorted, you know, into the paddy wagon to take down to the whatever. They didn't want to have to go through all that. And sure as heck, you know, a lot of the people responsible didn't. So what'd they do? They're in. So the state attorney generals, you know, they're all part and buddies with, but they got to get some. You know, it's all negotiating. You know, we got to give something to the people. We got to get something. You know, give us something. You know, so what do? They come up with a $25 billion settlement. Pocket change. You know, $25 billion. And they get, you know, everything they did is okay. So what are they doing? Well, they go, all right. It's supposed to go toward reducing mortgage payments for some troubled homeowners. But lots of other programs have promised to help struggling homeowners in the past, and results have been disappointing. All right, this is from National Public Radio. Yuki Noguchi reporting. So this latest plan is generating some new hope and lots of skepticism. Hope. There are two big ways the settlement differs from previous programs. It's different. Well, how is it different? Let's find out. For one, it's the first large-scale program that includes principal reductions. Oh, well, for the first time, instead of just getting bailed out by the taxpayer and just, you know, buying toxic assets and putting them on to the public dole and giving the bank just straight, giving them money, you know, for the first time, they're actually going to reduce the principal on your mortgage. You know how that happens? It's called bankruptcy. It's called, you don't got a freaking choice. So what are they doing? They're structuring it. It's part of the set. We're going to do it anyway. They have to. Heck, look, they only just write the whole thing off. So what are they doing? You know what? This thing that we got to do, this thing that the market's going to make happen anyway, this thing, you know, reduction in print, you know, this thing over here, this, you know, this liquidation of and bad debt, this thing, you know, I tell you what. You let us retain ownership, and we get the payments, and we still get the control, and the robo-signing was fine, and the paperwork we filed is legit. You go and do that, and don't put us in jail for it and everything. Then we'll lower it, and they still owe us the money, and we win. So they get all the property anyway. There was a guy that called in on Coast to Coast last night when Charles Goyette was on. They took some callers at the end, and he made a very simple point. I've heard this before, but I think he encapsulated it really well. I wish I could get the clip. But what he said was that when the Fed creates money and they loan it into existence, well, of course, they're charging interest. Okay? You know, it's like, okay, here's $1,000. Well, guess what? When we get paid back, you know, it's $1,100. Well, that $100, where does that come from? They just created it into existence to begin with. I mean, it's not like it was, you know, something mined or value increased. No, you owe us $100 more dollars than we created. So guess what? I got to go create more. We just got to Ponzi scheme this thing up so you can pay us back the interest. Well, when you have liquidation of debt and real estate, and this, sooner or later, you know, to get that money back, the people that get first grabs at the money, they get all the stuff. The cash, the money gets converted into stuff, and that interest gets paid one way or another in stuff. What a deal. Then he went and did it better and explained it better. But, you know, I mean, the concept is basically if you can just print money and it gets converted into you get the stuff, I'm all over that. You know, that's a good idea if you bad guy. Well, here you got, you know, this we've been covering. We knew this would happen. You know, it happened the savings and loan thing. You know, the very banks and people that had all the bad debt and so on, they got bailed out, then went out and bought it back for pennies on the dollar and did it again. Yeah, at what point do you go, damn? Well, we have enough information. We can see what's happening. It's happening right here. Secondly, it's a settlement and compliance from the lenders is mandatory. You know, it's a settlement and compliant. You know, lender, you must do that. The free market was going to make them do it. They didn't have a choice. They're going to be, you know, liquidating debt, writing off, doing bankrupt, foreclosing, whatever the heck they're going to do. The problem was is that they couldn't foreclose on it. They couldn't get it because the paperwork was messed up. And they're just doing robo sign and pretend we almost kind of sort of got the paperwork right. People challenge it and they were losing. They're freaking out and exposing criminality. And they're going, oh, we need some kind of, we got to make a deal with our buddies we put in office as attorney general and give us a get out of jail free card. And oh, by the way, we get to keep the stuff. And start charging them, and you accept these robo-signings. Wow, which distinguishes it from other programs that have been voluntary. For those reasons, Housing and Urban Development Secretary Sean Donovan has high expectations, because we got a government mandate. That's a free market mandate anyway. I don't know how much detail do we got to go into this kind of stuff. You know it's going to happen, but they can't get away from the math. It only works as long as everybody around the world goes, okay, we're just going to take these dollars. Well, they're stopping. I can't get us into gold fast enough to make it available to you guys. We're working on it. When it happens, it's going to explode. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Some factual understanding, explanation, here it comes. And if you've been around long enough, I mean, that's one thing that I really, it's not clairvoyance. It's just being able to see patterns from life as an activist out in the street, and you can see what's coming. It's just so obvious, neon flashing to me. I'll give you an example. Now, let's go to the story to where you have the U.S. Postal Service is going out of business. I mean, duh. Let me give you a little inside. Mike Duggar is a good friend of mine. He was state chair of the Libertarian Party here in Arizona, and he's a postal carrier in South Phoenix area, you know, Ahwatukee. And he always gives us kind of the inside, you know, how the union's doing and how, you know, the mindset and so on. He was even a steward for his union there, even though he's a hardcore libertarian. And he goes, there was a program at which one time they were saying, you know, some UPS CEO came out years ago and said, oh, we just beat the crap out of the Postal Service. They suck and, you know, use UPS. So you had the Postmaster General gets up and, huffing around saying, oh, that's not so. Then they started a program, you know, beating them every day in every way. So it was a big morale booster. We're going to go kick butt. Well, this went on and on and on. Finally, Mike goes up and he's at a meeting. And he goes up to supervisor and he says, you know, you can't make that comparison. And he goes, yeah. Goes, no, you, I mean, you don't pay property taxes. You know, you get all kinds of government, we don't got to pay, and we get an eminent domain and different, and we got enforced, and you got to, and we have, and monopoly of, and only we can have, and postal, and you got, you know, you're going to compare, and you got all this kind of monopoly of force? You don't have to pay property tax. That's why a lot of the small communities, you know, in a really nice place of town, they don't want to give this up to the Postal Service or federal government buildings because it takes them off the tax roll. So you have these small communities, you know, they go, ooh, we got a post office. They go, we don't want a post office. So this is, you know, this kind of thing. And that program just kind of went away. Then we have Gene Carbono in Maine, a regular contributor and listener for Freedom's Phoenix and the show. And he's a Pulse Carrot. We've done the history. He has a really good, I've done shows with him that we go from the beginning of the Postal Service and how it all started with the postal roads. You know, you want to know how government kind of eked into your life? It's a roads. Well, we're going to Arnie Road. Well, there is if you got the U.S. Constitution saying there's a post office and the postal road. And when you had competition, that's where you hear about Lysander Spooner. Now, he used to deliver mail three times a day in Boston for cheaper, better service. You know, Western Union, if it wasn't a teletype, I mean, it was all kind of battle whether Western Union could do it. Then you had Wells Fargo starting to use the rail system. Then you had the competition. They go. Then you had Postmaster in New York when faxing documents was coming in vogue. He was making it. He said it's illegal to send a fax communication, paper printing out because there's law that says it has to be Postal Service. You got to give me money. Seriously. They were like, you know, you can't fax. Can't. Email. So, I mean, it's just, if you could Federal Express. It is illegal for you to send a document. You just want to make sure it gets there. And even if it's cross town or whatever, and you just put it in the Fed, you know, it's important. You just want to get it, make sure and track. Like we're doing, you know, the dime card. We're probably going to go off the postal service because I'm just, there's, you know, there's different services that we need. There's not, you know, and then just life sucks. They're going to use law to say you have to. Okay. Well, then you get for mail fraud. I mean, once you're using the man's thing, then they just say, hey, you used the man's thing. So, you know, the man gets to get you because we're the man. So so what's going on? The U.S. Postal Service right now is so much a part of this country. It's in the Constitution. And yet with so much written communication now delivered via email, text messages, and the internet, the Postal Service is steadily losing business and operating in the red. Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe has given Congress until May 15th to find a way to keep the Postal Service solvent or he will start closing possibly hundreds of its facilities. The U.S. Senate passed legislation Wednesday aimed at shoring up the Postal Service while delaying proposed cutbacks. Now the issue moves to the House. The post office delivers more than 500 million pieces of mail a day, blah, 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 blah. Who cares? I don't even give a crap what they, you know, yeah, and? So their whole thing is that they're going to bail them out. You know, it's the reason why we have in our about on Freedom's Phoenix. We understood we were being screwed, you know, from the moment that the Constitution was even created. And, you know, everybody gives, you know, props to Ben Franklin for wanting to have a postal because it was important. Now communication between the colonies, it's so important that we should give this thing to the government. I mean, weren't they freedom guys? It was that important that we're going to put it in the Constitution. It was that important. Then, of course, he's first Postmaster General, of course, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, would you like to know, this is our about on Freedom's Phoenix. Would you like to, and we haven't changed this since we started 7 years ago. Powell, you know, wrote this. He and I did this, and here we go. I think mostly Powell wrote this. Would you like to know what freedomsphoenix.com is, who are the people behind it, and what our objectives in creating the website? We recognize that freedom was taken from us the moment the ink was drying on the Constitution. Today's governmental structure is imploding under its own weight, and its death rattles aren't going to be pretty. At Freedom's Phoenix, we observe, comment, and stay out of the way. We know freedom will rise from the ashes, and we want to make sure that everyone's freedom is never signed away again by those who believe they have the power to do so. That pretty much sums it. It goes on a little bit more, and we do it this way, and blah, blah, blah. But that we understood from the beginning. We knew the death rattles were coming. Hell, philosophically, I mean, once I started to see what was going on in the late 80s, I knew it was coming. Raised our entire family with the understanding that we're going to be where we are right now. And I was thinking, like, 2016. Now it looks like it might, you know, it could possibly drag out to then, but I don't think so. I mean, that's... God, we're 3 years away. I don't know if we're going to go that long. You know, I am. I mean, I don't know. I can do zombie banking, zombie company, zombie. You know, just keep printing a bunch of money. But you know, the second, I mean, over freaking night, just like we did in that Reuters interview they did on the gold revolution coming, $10,000 an ounce, which is it could be you know ungodly amount. I can't even contemplate how stupid it's going to get because once they abandon the dollar and they have anything else and any kind, there's going to be somebody that's going to be first, and it's going to be somebody that you know kind of wants to you know kind of. Sticking the knife in between the ribs and twisted a little bit on the U.S. anyway, you know, who would that be? I don't know. Who wouldn't it be? How many people have we pissed off and screwed around with? You know, I mean, we can only bomb so many people. I mean, you don't got enough drones. I mean, you know, this is, and the more you do it, the worse it gets. So I'm just, you know, big bad guys, they, them, those, they're going to keep doing what they keep doing, using force and threats of force to do whatever. And finally, all of a sudden, you know, who's the terrorist now? So that brings us to, you know, this, that's one thing. And one thing, Charles brought this up last night. He was talking about the, I'm going to go ahead and pull the story up here. It was over on Daily Bell. Did you have it up, Donna? On the site or in the archive? Okay. Here it is. Where do we go from here in the freedom movement? Now, Ron Holland, he sent this to us to put up. He wanted to make sure we shared this with everyone. And the issue is the Department of Homeland Security has bought a lot of ammunition. I mean, you know, 40 caliber, you know, I have one 40 caliber Glock handgun, and I don't really need another handgun, a rifle, and another caliber, and so on. You know, I do have the capacity to reload. And a friend of mine, he needed some money, and, you know, gave me a good deal on this, you know, revolver and this 40 caliber Glock. And I'm going, you know, that's as far as I'm concerned, it's like buying silver or gold. I mean, you know, it's an investment. I don't feel like I frittered away my money. You know, that's, you know, one more gun. All right, cool. But it's another caliber. And, you know, yay, you know, I got 40. Well, it piqued my interest when you find out Department of Homeland Security bought 450 million rounds of hollow point. What was this, for target practice? This is for laying waste to human flesh. What? And then 175 million rounds of .223? What? Why? 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 I'm... Why? Wow. I'm... In the next hour, at least in the last half of the next hour, we're going to have a Libertarian Party representative from Oregon that's doing a new region. He wanted to talk to me about forming a new whatever and save the Libertarian Party from a national convention. And guys, you know, we'll talk about it live on the radio and maybe we'll have fun.
Take control of your money today and do it with style. Young Austrians are right now fashioning the silver economy. Would you like to take part? You'll find all the tools you need at DontTreadOnMeme.com. Don't Tread on Meme is the only place where you can get your hands on silver dime trading cards with the most unforgettable designs, like Clint Eastwood's Fistful of Silver Dollars, Murray Rothbard, Enemy of the State, the Ron Paul Lovolution, and the cover art of George Orwell's book 1984. Download the free Silver Calculator app from the iPhone or Android markets and get up-to-the-minute silver spot prices at your fingertips. And hey, we're all Austrians now, so why not express your passion for silver and promote the ideas of honest money with Don't Tread on Meme's clever apparel? Boycott an empire of theft. Buy silver. Trade with value. Build a society of consent. Do it all at DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's DontTreadOnMeme.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. You know, a couple things I wanted to go over real quick. There's so many things, but I mean, we'll get to it. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow. But, When we talked about Washington considering a firepower solution to social unrest, well, I don't know. When you buy 450 million rounds of hollow point and 40 cal, I'm like, why? I mean, you're not getting hollow point for target practice. That's for, you know, ripping the flesh out of. And 40 caliber, I remember when there's always the big gun debate on, you know, what's the best, blah, blah, blah. You know, you got the weight of the actual round. You have the diameter of the round, the speed of the round, and all that equates into a formula to how much impact is there on the human body. And the 40 caliber, and there's 10 millimeter, you know, and the 40 caliber was kind of compete with 9 millimeter and 45, and which one has the more, and blah, blah, blah. 40 caliber was a big popular, it's going to start, you know, taking over in law enforcement and everything. And it looks like, you know, if they want to have maximum firepower, 40 caliber. So I guess they went to 40, 450 million, you know, rounds worth. I can tell you that. So what happens after the revolution? All this kind of either used it all up or it's going to be surplus and it's cheap later, one or the other. So Homeland Security does that and 175 million rounds of 223. Why? Well, Ron Holland says the answer is clear. The federal government is gearing up for the unprecedented social unrest worse than Greece or Spain when Washington is forced to impose austerity plans next year after this November's election. Either that or face runaway inflation to pay for the costly welfare programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, massive unfunded liabilities. You know, it just goes on and on and on. And, well, you know, you think that there's no ramifications for this. And what other stuff is going on? You know, we'll go on to Freedom's Phoenix. And a page two, it has. I wanted to talk about this. We'll do it another time. But, you know, here's a graphic that shows you how many of the companies are owned by only, you know, what was it, like 9 companies? You know, Kraft, Coca-Cola, Nestle, PepsiCo, Procter & Gamble, General Foods, Kellogg's, Mars, Johnson & Johnson. I mean, you get these, every single freaking thing in the grocery store is made by these few companies. I mean, not that I care, but they, you know, where's the diversity? You know, and what do they do with their government contacts to keep out competition? How they use the FDA? How they, I mean, this is all of this. We're at peak government and it's coming down. Then we have rural kids, parents angry about labor department rule banning farm chores. Now, I got to tell this story real quick. You know, fortunately for us, Taryn Lupo has called in. He wants to talk about this very thing. Say hello, Taryn.
Hey there, Ernie.
You know, I want to tell a little story real quick, you know, from our experience. We'll keep you on, and, you know, make sure you get to have your say. But I want to share this with you. When we had a restaurant, Our competition saw that we had four children, and it really gave us the ability to reduce our costs. We'd have higher quality products, lower prices to them. So, you know, we competed. I mean, we, you know, came into the market right when Papa John's opened 40 stores here in the Valley. And I'm like, you know, that kind of blindsided me. So we're just, you know, how much can we put in quality product, delivering pizza and wings and sandwiches and kind of, you know, we had going on. I had my four kids. That gave me a big price advantage. They work cheap or free, you know. So all of a sudden, they calling in the man. Here comes the wage and price control and labor standard board of the state and federal and everybody in badges and going down. I go, yeah, that's all very interesting. They're my children. And the law is if they're your children or grandchildren, then labor laws don't apply. That's why Chinese restaurants got 15 gazillion of the kids back there doing whatever. So this is as long as they get their health cards, as long as they, you know, you're not breaking laws, and as long as you're not, you know, abusing them or keeping them up past or in school night, they had some kind of rules and so on. But, you know, the thing, main thing, they're my children. And it's because of farming. On the farm, you know, families grow up. This is why you say you want to know you have good kids that have a good work ethic. Got time to lead, you got time to clean or feed the chickens or goats or something. And this work ethic came from rural America. This is, you know, you got, I had the farm chores. They want to take that away. What do you know about it, Taryn? Give me your comment, man.
Well, I, by no means, I'm not going to pretend that I grew up on a farm or anything. I was a suburban kid. But I have got into farming as a, well, a gardening mainly, but as the, what I think the economic collapse is getting closer and closer, and it was one of the, one things I wanted to learn how to do was, you know, I better learn how to at least grow food. Because people have this idea that you can just throw seeds in the ground and food magically appears. You know, and it doesn't work like that, unfortunately. And so I've been practicing some experiments and techniques with some gardening to see, you know, what's the best stuff I can grow here. And it's a learning process. Well, so I've gotten to know these some farmers. And back when I used to be a chiropractor, I lived in a very rural community where, you know, it was a lot of farming. And these kids, you know, it wasn't anything for a kid that was 9 and 10 to be driving around, you know, a tractor or a ATV. You know, and they get, you know what, kids get hurt, but kids get hurt playing sports, kids get hurt doing stupid stuff, kids get hurt. And it's this idea that somehow the government, like I would, if I was a farmer, I would find it so insulting that the government has decided that they care more about my kids than I do, and therefore they're going to tell me what I can do with my kids and what I can't. And I think this is a really big strike in the face to rural America. I mean,
okay, this is
imagine.
This is a perfect, you know, example. I'll tell you what happened. I come in from after our lunch rush when we had our pizza restaurant. You know, we did delivery. So what would happen is between like, you know, after cleanup and everything, it's 1:30, 2 o'clock to about 4 o'clock when you have the evening prep coming and so on. So like 2 hours, Donna and I, we just, you know, prepped everything, cleaned up. We sat down, we'd eat and whatever. And every now and then you get, you know, delivery here, there. And I take it out and I come back and she's there by herself with her gun behind the counter. And I come back and there's this guy yelling at her across the counter. And if you've anybody's ever met my wife, you know, if somebody's yelling at Donna, it's not her fault, okay? So I come out, I'm like, whoa, 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 what, can I help you? What's up, man? Is this some ass-whipping going to have to start here, you know? I mean, it's like, I got draw or what? I mean, what's going on? He was from the Federal Board of Labor, and he was, oh, she won't talk to me and answering my questions, and I'm, you know, shiny badge, and he whips out his big badge and fed and kind of, you know, and I go, oh, let's have a seat. Let's just sit down in the dining room there. And the problem, I said, look, you know, first off, I'll tell you right now, if I came in and my wife was talking to a federal agent without me being there, she had way more to worry from me than you. And he's like, oh, okay. You know, so he kind of calmed down a little bit there. I go, no, my wife instructed, don't say nothing. A good friend of mine, Greg Tidman, at just about that time, he had moved to Missouri to this farm, and he got stopped in his van, and they separated him and his wife. They have her in the van and put him in the squad car, and they're interviewing them both separately. They were so mad because his wife refused to talk to him. No, I'm not talking. No, I'm not saying anything. For an hour or two. Just, no, because our wives know. So they can't stand that. So the whole thing was about our children. They got a box to check off, and he actually said this. When I go, they're my children. Next. Well, don't you think that? And he starts going on about how I should raise my family and what I'm going, wait, time out. Seriously? You're going to tell a libertarian how he's going to raise his children? The state? And he goes, I'm just doing the Lord's work. He actually said that. I go, brother, are you freaking kidding me? Come to find out, he went to my church. And I'm going, get out while you can, man. After a 20-minute conversation, it all turned around. But we'll talk more about libertarian when we come back.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, and we have Taryn Lupo, one of my favorite people online. You know, I don't know if you've been listening lately. You know, Donna wears the silver dime earrings and bracelet you guys did all the time. You know,
really?
Did,
she still?
Did I get the copper bracelet, penny bracelet? Did you guys do that too?
Yeah, I made that too. That was, you know, I was making a lot of jewelry back then to pay my way through Porkfest.
You know, I'm going to rip you off, man. I think that's good. I got
right
some
on.
Nice. I'm going to give me some because I like it. I mean, they're partay. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to rip you off. But, you know, I just want you to know that we're thinking of you all the time. And I want to let you finish on this farm. How did that come to be such a, you know, on your radar screen about the, you know, it's always something that triggers people. And certainly out of the community, they go, oh, this just grinds my teeth. How'd you hear about it? Getting people all worked up?
Basically, because I'm still learning how to grow things, that I'm part of a lot of Facebook groups about gardening and the local gardening clubs and the, what's it called, the market, the farmer's market. And I saw this getting posted around there, and they were really mad. And it was a good, I think it's one of those very crystal clear opportunities that most people will look at that and lose respect for the government. Where they'll look at that and go, what are they doing? Because there's very, you know, a lot of activism, like when you look at the stuff going on in Keene, some people are like, I don't get it. But this is something where, you know, if you really hammered and made a big issue of it, it would back off.
They love the children.
Yeah, but it's for the children, of course.
Well, it's obvious to anybody that knows safety. Anybody that knows anything knows that this would be detrimental to the raising of the children. And but they'll come back with a lighter version, because it's all it is a toe in the tent. I mean, they just want to get some kind of new authority. Okay, yes, they can do it if and under the condition of. I mean, I've been through this a gazillion times, even in the restaurant industry, and it was just terrible.
I think I figured out what they're doing. Is they're saying the kid can do chores if they come and do a 90-hour safety class.
Right, that they have their buddies.
That they get to make money on.
Yep. It's right. Just like mandatory
that's probably where it's coming from. It was like when Savannah had this big deal where they were going to make all the bartenders get these alcohol licenses and permits, and the only people that wanted it was the city councilors and the people that run the classes. You know, that's where it came from, and it was like...
Oh, yeah. No, it was new. They have a, when I was at a restaurant, while I was doing big newspaper front page, me going at it with the government again, and it was all on 2 years they were planning this coming. I made it very clear, I'm not doing this. And they have a food handler's card that you get and so on. Well, they wanted to add another level. It's like a manager's food handler card. Well, there's, even at the management level in the restaurant industry, you have a turnover at least 100%. So you got 6,000-7,000 restaurants. All of a sudden, you have, you know, 100% turnover of 3 or 4 per restaurant, 7 times. You're looking at 20,000 people got to keep taking this class, and guess who gave it? The Arizona Restaurant Association, with a mandate from the county. It was just a money-making thing. And I made a big stinking deal. I'm going, arrest me, man, let's do it. And they did. They came in, cited me, criminal citation. Mark, Victor, and I went and back and forth. And all. And my thing was, is they were forcing you to join their organization to get the class that you had to do in order to operate your business. And I go, that's a 13th Amendment violation, involuntary servitude. You're forcing me into a third-party contract. And they didn't. They go, damn, man, these damn libertarians are always in our face. So we had them change, but made a big woo-hoo out of it. But they still, here, they just keep coming. You know, and there's all, you know, one thing I wanted to do is, Drew was telling me that you're doing dime cards. He's making some stuff up for you. He said it's working out well for you. Tell me all about that.
Yeah, the way we set it up is, you know, Ruby and I will go out and we'll work these events. And we're trying to sell our books to the public as well, because although my books have liberty themes, they're kind of subtle. So you can sell it to the public and they'll actually read it and enjoy it. And I do more sales actually at little, you know, like shrimp festivals and little River Street festivals and that sort of stuff than I actually do at Liberty events. It ends up being that a lot more people are shopping, I guess. So we go to these events every other week or so right now. It's festival season. And what happens is we're dressed as pirates, because when we dress as authors in suits, nobody came and talked to us, and then we put on pirates and we practically quadrupled our sales. I mean, it really helps when a guy's in a pirate outfit. They come over and the kids run over. And so we put out all this fake treasure all over the table between the books. We put out like little gold and you know, plastic diamonds and stuff. And little kids always run up and say, oh my gosh, they'll pick up the doubloon and say, is it real? And I say, no, that's not real, but this is. And we pull out the silver card and we show them, this is a real piece of silver. You ever seen it? And we drop it in the kid's hand, and they stare at it, and they look at it, and they turn to their mom and say, I want this. It's like they inherently know that silver is valuable. And it's a really, really easy sell, because the parents recognize what it is and say, oh, yeah, we got a couple of those at home. Sure, $5. It's got a little skull and crossbones on it. You know, it looks a little pirate. It kind of looks like pirate treasure. So it's a real easy upsell. And the price point's good. You know, it's $5, so if they can't afford a $20 book or a $10 book, you work down to the $5 card. And we just sold cards like crazy that weekend. And it was just at a little podunk shrimp festival.
Well, now tell me about what the card looks like. Does it have your Pirates of Savannah artwork on it from the cover, sir?
Oh, Drew's supposed to send one to you. It has the front has a skull and crossbones that Ruby did up, and it's really pretty. And it says Pirates of Savannah on it. And then the backside is one of our book covers, and it says, you know, email us for a free book, like a free e-book. I send out free e-books to anyone that wants one, like if they're curious. So we hand that thing out, and it was the most genius marketing idea I think we've ever had. Because if you really think about it, I'm getting paid to give out my business card. I'm making about $2 a card.
And they're not throwing it away.
And they're never throwing it away. So people are paying me to take my business card. If you look at it as marketing, it's the most genius marketing you've ever done.
No, you know? I understand. We're gearing up. A lot of people don't know the past. From the moment that we had the success with the Daily Paul, Michael Nystrom and I have been working on artwork, getting production lines set up, having the printer, you know, negotiating all kinds of whatever. And because they're gone to Daily Paul, I don't know if you know this, Peace, Gold, Liberty. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I do. I'm looking forward to see if you guys can pull off a gold card.
Already done, man. I tell you, it's going to be, we have the half gram and full gram contract we're dealing with that it's going to be put into a credit card.
and it's going to, you know, and we can get the price point. That's what we're negotiating now, to where when you buy grams of gold, it's up to like 23% over spot to do that, because it gets more expensive over spot as you get down into the smaller things. So I'm going, we might be able to get it at our cost going out at less than 10% over. So all of a sudden we become competitive with Credit Suisse. And we're going to, and Michael and I are working, we're going to hit this hard. We're going to go at it hard. And as successful as the dime cards were, we're going to do gold too. But the dime cards, you're always going to need them for exactly what you're doing. You know, this promotion thing. I'm really glad it worked out, and we got more coming. Hold on, Terry.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock. Yeah, I got a mic. Oh, yeah, we got a guest. We got to crank it all the way up to hear him. But we're going to make sure we get to spend time with Wes Wagner. Now, this is, let me give you some background so I understand what we're going to talk about. And I wanted to, you know, I spare you all this internal Libertarian Party, ouch, quit it stuff and everything on purpose. We don't talk a lot about it because you're still voting. I mean, you know, if you think you're going to vote yourself free, you haven't been paying attention. But there are people in the freedom community that have used the Libertarian Party as a mechanism to expand liberty in their area. You know, the Libertarian Party really is at a local, county, and sometimes even state level. But I have only found that the most effective Libertarian activists are the ones that concentrate on their local politics and ignore whatever's above them. You know, you got a bigger, shinier badge than me, or you're confusing me with somebody that cares. But we have the National Libertarian Party Convention coming up in just a couple of weeks. And it's come to the attention of a lot of people what's happening and how it's progressed and gone down. And I've run for national chair four times, 04, 06, 08, and 10. Okay, I'm done. I said what I said. Everything that I predicted was going to happen has happened. Same people that, you know, said it wouldn't, you know, found to be, you know, untruth tellers. We have what's going on now is predictable as freaking sunrise. And we have a progression that has, I tell you what the result is. The libertarian movement in this country doesn't even see the Libertarian Party on their radar screen. They're not waiting for the Libertarian Party to join the libertarian movement. It's gone plaid. It's so far past them. These young people, they're doing, heck, they're not even voting anymore. The anarchist, the voluntarist, the leave me aloneist, the whatever, the individualist, something. It's like, you know, the Libertarian Party is not even an option as a tool to do this stuff. Why? Why? Well, some people are trying to change that. Some people are trying to reinsert the Libertarian Party into the Libertarian movement. They're trying to make it a viable alternative for people to actually use the political process to have some change. Many people have just abandoned it. Now, they may use Dr. Paul's rhetoric and his campaign to help get the message out. But as far as actually having something to do inside the political structure, I don't know. Now, Wes wanted to talk about what is going to happen and what they're working on and trying to do to encourage our participation. A lot of the activists here in the Southwest and a lot of people that we associate with, please come back in. We need your help at this convention in Las Vegas, which is close. I can drive there. Heck, I just went there for the last few days. You know, it was Sunday morning to, you know, Tuesday night. I just drove up Vegas, you know, visit with some friends and chill. Now, I can go up there. You know, ain't no thing. I got a place to stay. But why would I? What's going on? Well, Wes, I got you there.
You do.
Wes, help me out. I mean, that's a good, I'm going to go, man. Convince me why I need to go.
Ernie, I saw your name on the list of delegates, and I couldn't help but call you.
Well, you know, I don't know. Other people have called me, too, and I'm going, I didn't put my name on there.
Apparently they love you that much.
Well, the state just assumed I was going, I guess. You know, that doesn't mean I got to go. It doesn't mean I won't. You know, Barry Hess, the gubernatorial candidate, you know, extraordinaire here in Arizona, is going. He's encouraging we should go up and have fun. He lives like 300 yards from me. So he's like, come on, Ernie, we'll go up and have some fun again.
We're going to have a whole lot of fun, Ernie.
The only reason I go is to visit with y'all and have a good time and, you know, how much I can get recreated. And other than that, you know, Why should I care? What are you guys going to do that's going to encourage me to go?
Well, you know how they say this is the homecoming convention? Well, what it really means is the chickens are coming home to roost.
What do you mean? Now, well, I know it's a 40th anniversary or something. That's
yeah,
why they call
it. And they build it as the homecoming convention. But you know full well that over the last, you know, 4, 6, 8 years, there's been a serious divide in the party between what could be characterized as the libertarian faction and these people who used to call themselves the reform faction, but now they're kind of calling themselves neo-libertarians, whatever that means. I know the first time I met a neoconservative, I didn't like what I saw either. And at this point in time, they've gone past where they could go politically without basically destroying themselves. They've gone beyond the pale. You know, they've imposed a $94 floor fee, you know, managed to ram it through the Judicial Committee.
Got to get rid of the riffraff, man.
Got to get rid of the riffraff, you know. But the thing is that all of a sudden has made the riffraff angry. And they're not really riffraff. What they call the riffraff is, unfortunately, the libertarian faction of the Libertarian Party.
You remember it was in St. Louis, Missouri Convention in 10, the last one.
And yeah, they tried it.
Were you there?
I was not there. I've been minding my own business in Oregon as best as I could. And back around 2006, 2007, when the National Party started interfering on behalf of a political director we had that was...
No, the convention was there in 06 in Portland. You know, I remember visiting your guys' workshop and everything. You guys got it going on.
Yeah, well, we at the time, we actually had the appearance of success rather than actual success. If you peeled back the layers of the onion of what was really going on in Oregon at that time, we had an executive director who was using the party debit card to buy 3 meals a day for himself and groceries for his apartment. And when you actually looked at the finances of the party, we spent less than 2% of the entire budget on actual political activity.
I'm so shocked.
And you can look at the National Party budget right now. They're spending about 20% of all of their available funds, you know, the money that's left over after they've paid for fundraising, on actual political activity. The Red Cross, I think, at the height of Elizabeth Dole, managed 22%.
You know, I mean, if you heard any of my rhetoric, any of my speeches, I mean, was I predictive of all this or what? I'm going, what's the purpose of the party? I mean, it was to supply any kind of resources for the local activists. I mean, other than that, why are you there? I mean, I've been through this before. And I remember the reason I asked if you were in St. Louis is, do you know who Jim Dunsing is?
Dunsing? I do.
Jim was one of the nominating speeches, and he made a good point. Regardless of whatever opinion you may have of Jim, he got up and he said, you know, everybody's talking about the big tent. We need to, you know, open up the Libertarian Party to include, you know, Barr and Root and all these other neo, whatever they are. And he's going, you know, as you're doing this big tent thing, can we leave room for libertarians? Can we have room in this tent for the libertarians? No, they're the ones that are in the way of them doing their country club, whatever the heck. And I'm going, this is so obvious. It's gotten to the point now to where the libertarian movement has bypassed the Libertarian Party, and I don't see how they're going to, you know, reintroduce themselves into the movement. They don't have anything anybody wants other than ballot status. And the young people are like, "You're still voting? Wait, seriously? You think you're going to vote yourself free?" So I'm wondering, what is it that you have in mind? You want to talk to me about? There's a plan. Well, what's your plan?
Well, the plan is to actually change. You know, right now the party's upside down in the way it spends money. We need to flip that the other direction. We need to be spending that money just basically putting tools in the hands of people out there who are actually doing the real battles at the real local levels, at the state levels, etc. And we need to take direction from them rather than giving them direction. And this should seem like an obvious concept, but it has somehow been lost on the leadership of this party for the past decade. And the results are obvious. We are out of touch. We're out of step. You've got a national organization that is basically devolving into an Elks Club with ballot access.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, but you think this is like even just the last 10 years. This is like a new thing. I mean, I started... I think
momentum started going the wrong direction before that. But
from
the last
beginning.
The last 10 years showed exactly how well things are going under the paradigm that they want to operate. Because they've actually had the ability to operate freely as they've wanted to, and this is the result.
Well, you know, when we come back, we'll talk more with Wes Wagner, what can be done in saving the Libertarian Party as even being, you know, known by the Libertarian movement. You know, it's not even on the radar screen. Why? I mean, that took some effort. I mean, you had to be creative to make that happen.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com, constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA. Beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. We're on the line with Wes. Now, Wes Wagner is from Oregon, and he's been up close and personal with the meanderings of we want to rule you in our turn, and it's our turn to wear the ring and, you know, and bind them, put them in the ring. We control it. It's ours. We get the levers, and they'll do whatever they can to make sure that they get whatever they, them, those want. And we went through this in Arizona. Now, Oregon's gone through it. I remember South Carolina, the local San Francisco party, Georgia, Florida. I mean, it goes on and on and on, whatever. You know, it's like imagine this. You got a 2x4 with a bunch of nails in it, okay? And you got the centralized, collective, national, whatever reason you create any kind of organization, sooner or later the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. Well, the National Party is definitely that. And they got this big hammer, and they go around hitting nails that are sticking up the most. Well, Arizona was sticking up a whole bunch there for a long time. And they, bam, 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 bam. Then it's Oregon's turn. Oh, I'm sorry, you're not it with the program. You know, so I got to ask Wes, I'm going, okay, Wes, you got to help me out here, man. You know, why, I don't even want to know the details, I don't care. But I'm just, is there an effort to take back local control, ignore national, why you even care about affiliation with? Because we proved in our lawsuits in Arizona that national party does not control the local party. It ballot status belongs to the state, not national. They don't have to affiliate with you, but they don't get the ballot status. So this is a big battle that always goes on. They want a centrally controlled plan. They want a 5-year plan. You know, and in Oregon in 06, the platform was entirely stripped. They took it all away, everything, because Bob Barr was coming in. They need a neocon be able to run as a libertarian without that pesky old platform about freedom. So is there an effort and part of what you're doing to bring that back or what? Why would I care what you guys do?
Well, the platform will come back to a state where it represents real libertarian ideology when the political battle's already been won. Once you've taken these people out of office, taken away their rings of power, cast them down, then things will return back to the way that they should be, and we will have a party that actually represents the principles that it's supposed to represent. Until that point in time, we unfortunately have a street fight. They came into Oregon to try to suppress the libertarians here in Oregon because we, you know, had gotten a little bit too off the reservation. We were, you know, throwing around ideas like, oh, well, maybe everybody in the state who's registered as a libertarian should be considered a member. And that just, you know, caused them to pucker up so tight that they had to send everybody and their cousin out here to try to dogpile on us to keep us down. Well, we beat them all. Not only did we beat them all, now we're coming after them.
Well, we went through this. I mean, Arizona did the exact same thing. You know, the same reason. They had a thing called a Unified Membership Program, UMP. And what it was about is that the only way you could join the state party was you had to join National. You send your money to National, and then they sent you back a cut. I'm like, what is it, the water in the Beltway or something? That we got to be sending stuff to National, and then they're going to send it back? And we're going, right.
So just the mafia model.
Just out of principle, we said, no, we're not, you know, people will promote, and you guys go be National member, whatever, but that has nothing to do with the state. Oh, man, that gets you targeted. I know exactly what you're going through. But the philosophy that they're using is it's kind of like...
It's a statist philosophy.
Yes, exactly. It's a we control central command from up here. And I'm going, you know, this is not new. And I'm wondering, okay, you're going to go after them in what way? I mean, we're going to go after now. We're going to do something. What are you going to do?
Well, we're going to show up at the national convention, and we're going to expose them for what they are. Whether we win the elections or not, it's going to go to destroy their credibility because they have done so many things that are so far beyond the pale. But most of the time when people show up there, they don't come prepared. They don't really know the type of battle they're dealing with. They've never read things like The Art of Urban Survival. They don't know how to fight sociopaths. They haven't read Sun Tzu, The Art of War. They haven't internalized it. They just go there and scream. We aren't going there to scream. We're going there for a bloodletting.
How many? I mean, what are you doing? How are you organizing? Who's going? How many people are anticipated to be at this convention? How many do you have? I mean... You know, give me your game plan here. You know, why talk to me? What do we want to do?
Well, the reason I'm talking to you is because obviously you're close. You've got a good reputation. You understand these people. You've dealt with them before. And this is going to actually, ironically, be a low-attended convention. There's only about 600 delegates that have registered. And you know that means that probably about 400, 450 will show up.
And about 200 of them are going to be for one candidate or the other or slate or whatever. And they got their little, we can go on and on about how this is done. But I tell you, it's no different in the Libertarian Party than it is a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, the biggest thing is, should Ron Paul run as a Libertarian? Hell no. Shouldn't be running as anything. You know, I'm like, you're still voting? But I'm glad he's there because he's, and you know my role in the Ron Paul thing. I was busting butt for everybody to be able to support the Libertarian rhetoric that he did. It changed the planet. But it had nothing to do with voting. It's just how long can you keep him up on the stage? And how long you can go through the National Convention of the Republican? How long you can, I mean, it's just, and emphasize all the stuff that's happening, but the Libertarian Party has looked at the success of this, and it's not even registering with them. They don't understand. They thought that the Lovolution was just going to go to bar. I mean, seriously. I mean, I'm there giving speeches, saying, what are you, stupid?
They don't understand that third-party politics is not about winning elections. It's about using the stage to actually put a moral voice into an otherwise immoral process. And if you do that correctly and consistently for long enough,
you change culture.
You will change the culture. And when there is a moment of crisis, when that moment of crisis comes, if you have been on message the entire time and had the right message and the moral message, at that point, at that inflection point in history, people will look to your ideas and say, okay, we're ready to try something different because what we had didn't work.
You know, there is... You know, I'll go to, I'm going to the LP.org, all right? And I go, all right, platform or, you know, founding documents, preamble, you know, here, where does it have? All right, here we go.
It's worthless.
Let me go ahead and read the statement. I'll make my point. We, statement of principles, this is, you got, it takes 7/8 in convention to change this. And every convention they try and change this, all right? It says, we... The members of the Libertarian Party challenge the cult of the omnipotent state and defend the rights of the individual. We hold that all individuals have the right to exercise sole dominion over their own lives and have the right to live in whatever manner they choose, so long as they do not forcibly interfere with the equal right of others to live in whatever manner they choose. And it goes on from there. But right there, you know, that was my whole campaign. I'm going, I challenge the cult of the omnipotent state. Because what is, you know, a cult. I mean, it's just worship and adoration of some, you know, idol or whatever, an omnipotent state. They're worshiping this all-powerful, all-knowing state. And we're going, no, we challenge that. And they were like, oh, we don't like that. So what'd they do? They wanted to change a statement of principles, but they couldn't do it because it was kind of a poison pill from the beginning of the creation of the party. So they go into the bylaws, and they did. I witnessed this progress of how them doing this. They changed it to where the purpose of the Libertarian Party is to elect people to office, and so because that's what they want to do. It's all about elections, all about giving money. It's all about, you know, structure and organization and jobs for people and executive directors. It was all about the money thing. And I saw it evolve as a young man in the early 90s, seeing what they were doing and who was doing it and why and how. It's because Robert's rules. You know, you're going to take Robert and shoot him. Okay, so I don't know who Robert Rule is, but that guy.
I know that the authors will give you any opinion you want, so long as you pay them enough.
Yes, no, this is I already know this. So I'm if we're going to go to Las Vegas and take this on, okay, I'm all for it, and I'll go for the entertainment. But I'll tell you, you know, this is it's like you're trying to, you know, you're trying to save something that does it deserve to be saved. I'm. Give me your quick answer, man. Is there hope? I mean, is there some, you know, benefit to even making the effort?
The culture of the party as it exists today is not worth saving. What is worth saving is just taking the ballot access away from these people and putting it back in the hands of actual libertarians, so that we can use it as a platform to actually change the
What do you think the likelihood of your success is? You got a lot of support?
I've got a decent amount of support, and I expect to pick up a lot more when I'm there, given both the incumbents are very well encumbered by their performance records and voting records.
All right, well, stay there. We'll talk some more. Maybe we can see what we can do to help. See you tomorrow.